And good afternoon, and welcome to Angel Answers. I'm your host, Amy Toy. I have a very special guest, his name is David Matthew Brown. He is a author, speaker, facilitator, and healer. You know, he devotes his time to sharing a fresh and unique message of transcendence, unity, and spiritual healing. And he wrote this wonderful book, and he's been featured with many people, you know, Byron Katie, Desmond Tutu, Don Miguel Ruiz, Marin Williamson, all those wonderful guys, you know, people that are out there in the spiritual community. And his book is The Book of Light, The Heart Opening. Welcome, David. How are you this afternoon?
Good. Welcome. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yes, this is a great book. You really, what I found interesting about this book is you have it in six sections, and it's really, it's, for some of us, it might be a tough read because I had to go through a couple times myself and reread some stuff. But the book is awesome. I mean, it's really good. It's something that is very, very enlightening. But the book's not channeled. Is that true? It felt like it was some kind of channeled material in there.
Yeah, you know what? It may be channeled, but as far as like me knowing that the book is channeled, if for me, where the channel may have occurred, where, I mean, everything's channeled, right? I mean, we're not doing anything on our own. So let me just be clear with that. I have my own self, can do nothing. So
yeah.
So let me just be clear about that. So yes, it was probably channeled, but it wasn't that I sat down and channeled a book.
Okay. Yeah, I know when I'm writing my blogs or I'm writing a book myself, it sometimes spirit will come to me in my head, and then I'll write it. But now I have a dragon, so I speak it, so it's a lot easier.
I love that. Wow.
Yeah, so it's a lot easier, believe it, especially when you don't want to get carpal tunnel. So let's discuss a little bit about the book here. It's kind of the end of the book is really amazing. I just finished it up actually earlier this morning because I had a busy weekend. But what is the Book of Light? Explain, what is that, the Book of Light? I mean, we talk about light beings, we talk about light. What is this book about?
I'll just give you the quick backstory for myself, and then
that
may help your listeners in where the book actually originated from. I had gone through a divorce, and I had the best way I can describe it was I had played soccer for something like 14 years when I was a kid. And sometimes when the ball hits you in the chest, you get the wind knocked out of you, and literally there's no wind, no air or breath in your body. It feels like forever. I mean, it's probably a short time. Then all of a sudden the air comes right back into your body, and you could breathe again, but there's a time when you feel like you can't breathe. So that really hit me really hard. And so I was pretty much just kind of knocked down and didn't really know what to do. And we have a beautiful daughter together. And so, you know, you're just kind of moving and flowing with that. And so I found myself in kind of on my knees, kind of in a place where nothing was happening. Everything went away. Like, you name it, clients, everything, just gonzo. And I was sitting in that space, and I was in my practice, and I have a practice of meditation and prayer. And so I was in my practice of meditation. My mind got really quiet, and this may go back to your first question on channeling. So my mind got really quiet, really calm, no thoughts, nothing to go to, no running. I just kind of sat there in this great place of stillness. And then what came out of that, it felt like just like a lava lamp. You know how a lava lamp is? Like a thought. It felt like that, like a lava lamp, like a loop. And the idea came, what is light? And so I sat with it, and I just contemplated, what is light? And as I was contemplating what light was, all of a sudden I just had this amazing kind of story come out of me, which is what you were just talking about, which is the last part of the book. It's literally the last chapter of the book. And so I wrote it all down, typed it all up. There's maybe a couple things that needed to be changed grammatically because I was writing so fast. And I I sat with that story and I looked at it and I was like, I have really no idea what I just wrote. Like, this is interesting. So I left it, I came back to it, and when I came back to it again, something just kind of clicked, and I was like, wow, maybe this is what people are talking about with 12, 12, 12, and all these different dates, and maybe this is what's happening. Maybe we came here as light, and meaning that we're fully expressive, fully sovereign, fully alive, and however you want to look at it, just fully expressing ourselves in our true heart center. Maybe that's how we came here, and then down the road we got lost in beliefs and traditions and stories, and that developed, the story became divisive because we needed people to have a story with, and blah, 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 and now we are all coming back into who we are, which is light. And so light to me could mean many different things. My aunt, who read the book, uses light as energy because the word energy helps her out better than the word light. Some people use love. Some people use consciousness. Some people use peace. Some people just use nothingness. So light could be whatever you want it to mean. And it just feels like that full expression of who you are, and it's tough to put a label on it. But I feel like you know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Yes, and that is very true. We are all beings of light. And when I read the book and talking about, you said unlearning. In the Course in Miracles, it talks about we're undoing the process. We're unlearning. We're learning how to be back to our true selves. And that is very true. And you know, that's kind of what the book spoke to me. That was my, I don't want to say interpretation or observation of it, but that's what I felt it was, the unlearning of all the stuff that we have, the stuff that we, our story, who we are, you know, so.
Yeah.
Or who we perceive to be. So it was very interesting, and the Book of Light is written in an old spiritual style like the Bible. Why did you choose this style of writing?
You know, the interesting thing is when I started to write the book, that's the first style that came forward for me. That was the first thing. That's how I wrote that last chapter. That's why I had to, like, read it a couple times to figure out, like, wow, this is, like, not how I normally write. Like, how I years ago, I was a poet, so I used to write a lot of poetry, and, you know, the creative aspect would come from kind of that no-minded place, and I'd write, and then what I realized was that the poems that I was writing at the time, after I wrote them, it would take me like, it would be like my wisdom teacher, like my inner wisdom was teaching me, and that's how my higher self worked with me, was I'd write it down, and then a couple months later, I would actually become that. Like, that was my, I could see my transition, like where I was going to.
Mm-hmm.
And so the same was true about this, that when I wrote it, and wrote the book, I just went, holy cow, this is where I'm going. I'm coming back home. I'm ready to come back home now. And that style for me, what I love about the book is that it's such a contemplative journey it takes you on as a reader. And it gives you the space where you can leave off at any place in the book and not feel like you're going to miss something or you're in the middle of something. You can actually just pick the book anywhere and read something and contemplate it. And it will help in allowing you to come back to a place that already exists.
Yeah, it was, and it's, let me explain to the listeners that thing. It's numeric. So it's sometimes it's short paragraphs, it might be a sentence, it may be a long paragraph, but it's not so, how can I put this? So hard to comprehend. The reading comprehension was really good for me. I liked how you broke that down. It was easy. It was like, oh, okay, cool. wasn't this long narrative paragraph where I'm like, okay, when is this thing going to end? You know, get to the point. It was really good. And what was with the numbers? Was it just that's the way you wrote it or that just how it came about? I thought it was really good. I thought that was actually
Yeah, the numbers were just how that came about. And that's interesting because one of the things that I really love about the book is that it's simple and yet it's profound.
Mm-hmm.
So it really allows you to see the power of simplicity, which sometimes in as a radio host, you probably get sent tons of books. Mm-hmm. You know, we're inundated in a culture where it's got to be 200, 300 page books and tools and techniques, and before you know it, by like chapter one, you're exhausted because you need to accomplish 10 techniques, and if you miss it, then you got to go back to technique number one or tool number one. And, you know, this is, we're in a process. We're all in a process, and we're all in this together. And in that process, we're all finding ways to make it and kind of bring it all back home and come back into that peace of mind and allow that to be our governing principle, allow that to take over our life. And so it's a process. And the numbers, it's just, that's just where it came from. It was just kind of, who knows, maybe it was Metatron. Maybe Metatron was like, we're on an angel show, I can talk about it. Maybe Archangel Michael and Metatron were like, David, just do this, trust him.
Mm-hmm. Usually when the angels say, trust him, you do it.
Yeah, you just do it. Yeah.
It's like Nike, just do it, you know, and not worry about that.
True.
Yeah, it is true. And it's interesting because, like you said, you had gone through a very earth. I think when we go through divorces or a loss of a loved one or near-death experience, sometimes that really gets us back to ourselves, our own core, who we are. I think that's true of a lot of us who have been, I don't know, on the spiritual journey. I think we're all on a spiritual journey. It just depends on where we are and what we're doing. But I think some of us are really shaking our trees. I think it's shaking our core. And, you know, sometimes beautiful stuff comes out of that. You know, books come out of it, poetry, guidance, wisdom, whatever, if you, what have you. But I just think that this is a beautiful work of art. It really is. You know, when I got it, I was like, wow, it's numbered. But when I read it, I was like, wow, this is really good. So.
Yeah, well, that's interesting because I was on a show, and the show was an hour long, and the radio host, like right when we started, he said, you know, I get these 300 to 200-page books. So when I received your book, I put it on my table, and I walked away, and I was like, what does this book have to offer me? And I was like, oh, no, like we have like 59 minutes to go. And then he said, he went back to the book, and he was astounded and astonished by the book, especially by the Book of Innocence, mm-hmm. and yes. Which is inside the Book of Light. And so he said, so I must apologize to you. It doesn't have to be a long book. You have a lot to say right here. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. I think it's, you're right. And through our adventure, kind of through the muck and stuff, if we're able to be with it, through that, you know, what already is will come through.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we will. Yes, we will. You know, and it's amazing because I think you can say things in a profound sense without being too wordy. I think it depends on your writing style. I like to get to the you know, the heart and root of the matter. I don't like to write about things that are so, you know, extemporaneous. I want it just right there. You know, my editor will say, well, how come you didn't make this longer? And I'm like, because what else is there to say, you know? So,
yeah, yeah. But you're from the East Coast.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, it sounds like you're from the East Coast. You just kind of listen,
yeah.
We're doing.
Yeah, let's get to the heart of it. Yeah, New York, yep, that's me.
And it's probably how, you know, you work with angels. It's probably how angels work, your inner wisdom works. Your inner wisdom is very crystal clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, here it is. This is what I learned. You know, let's go to it. Yeah, I think with your book, too, you got, I mean, some of the wording, I had to look. I'm like, really? That's it? Because I think we as humans, like, over, like, analyze things to death. And it's simplistic, and that's how spirit is, especially with light. It's light. That's it. You don't have to analyze it, go through it. You know, this is light. This is what it is. So.
Yeah, and the fascinating thing is on that last chapter, one of my friends who might be listening to the show will probably be laughing right now. But I sent him the chapter of the book, the last chapter of the book, and he read it, and he said, this is amazing. I have no idea what you're talking about. So you might want to, like, help us out a little bit. So that's why I wrote this the five chapters before. The five chapters before lead you right into the last chapter.
Yeah, you pull it together, you integrate it into the last chapter, which I thought was cool. And that's, yeah, because you have different cast of characters, which in the book you talk about the storyteller. Can you explain what the storyteller is and what it might be to some of us? And I know what the answer
yeah.
is, but I'm going to let you explain.
Yeah, definitely. The storyteller. We all have a storyteller in our mind. And you might want to look at the storyteller. Some might look at that storyteller as ego. Some might look at it, whatever language you may look at it. But the storyteller is constantly interpreting, judging, telling a story. And the story, once you tell a story, no matter if you're the hero or not, it's going to bring out division. And the story always has a beginning, middle, and end. And the stories always try to formulate characters. And it's how you could tell the storyteller is the storyteller always believes that there's the other. Spirit doesn't. Spirit knows it's all one. So everything in your life is connected, no matter what. It's all working for you. Whether you can identify with that or see that or not or be with that or whether that's difficult for you to understand right now, it's of no consequence in your life right now because spirit is just all one. It's all connected. So there is no division. There is no us against them. You know, if you spot it, you got it.
Yeah, that's good.
So the storyteller is that aspect or that part of you which is like all over the place sometimes, you know.
Division, or some people, you know, who, I don't know about you, but come to us and they live in their story. They live in the past. And it's amazing because it's like maybe something happened 20 years ago and they still live in that story. And that's kind of what I got to. People, or they're in the victim mentality. Well, I was molested, I was raped, or whatever it is, and that's why I do the things I do. And if you really look on that journey, it's all connected. I mean, I don't know. I don't know about you, but it is really all connected. The journey's all connected to me. Everything happened, and it's all connect the dots for me. So.
Yeah, what's fascinating is as you go into that place of stillness and, you know, no mind, or where they would say empty your mind, however you want to be with that in your life, whatever language you want to use, it's great. As you enter that space, you just realize there is no you or me or any of us, that here we are. We're just in this space, and this consciousness just wants to flow through you, wants to flow through anybody. So it's just like, please, empty your mind, like get yourself right, forgive, whatever it is that you need to do to get yourself right. There's so many different modalities for people to practice, to allow them to rest in that space, you know?
Yeah, there is, and, you know, I always tell people not every journey, you know, what my journey may be or your journey may be, that may not work for them, maybe parts of it, whatever. But, yeah, get to that place. I mean, when you work through a lot of your stuff, there's an inner peace that I can't explain to anyone. I can just tell you, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. Accept it. I accept whatever. You know, just like it sounds like you've accepted a lot of things in your life, and so you just kind of like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what we're doing when we're forgiving, right? We're in that space of acceptance. And to speak to what you brought up, I know that you had touched on it briefly, just about people coming to you and being molested and different things. You know, I went through my own series of events in my life where, you know, I was violated sexually. But you know what? I realized that when I forgave that in my life, it forgave all the other patterns because of that one event. And I mean a lot of patterns that I had with that you in general, but someone may perceive as a shadow or dark aspect or whatever. And so once I forgave that and bring the light to it and acknowledged that this is what happened and sat with it and learned what the connections, you know, what the growing was for myself, I was able to release it. And so, and come to another aspect of realizing that, holy cow, we are all connected. So,
yeah.
You know, but before that, it wasn't. It was like me against him, and you know, and it was crazy. It was, but I understand that. So I understand that from the perspective of at first you're like, what? We can't all be connected because there's something that's exciting about telling everybody your story of being a victim, that you're not good enough, that you're not worthy enough. I brought this up at Spiritual Center the other day, and it shocked some people. So I'll bring it up on your show. What the heck?
Okay, sure.
That when people talk about being unworthy or that they're unworthy, they're not good enough, that's a form of violence against yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's a form of self-rejection against who you innately are. And the reason why I say violence, because at least it gets people's attention. Because we have a tendency in our society to kind of toss around these terms and not really see the significance of what we're saying. And so we're very comfortable in being a victim. We're very comfortable in blaming. We're very comfortable in complaining and gossiping. And look at our media. We paid millions upon millions of dollars for people to gossip. So,
yeah, really.
You know,
yeah.
There's a payoff. There's a payoff to it. We're saying that there's a payoff to it. But your value is in peace of mind. Your value is in that profound calmness that is innately you. And so hopefully that's encouraging for your listeners to look at where they're at and say, you know what, I am going through something right now. It is very difficult for me. But I'm going to sit with this, and I'm going to be with it, and I'm going to look at it, and I'm going to be with it, whether you're with it and you decide you want to forgive it, but to be with it. Just be with what you don't want to be with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a time, yeah, people, when my therapist friend of mine said to me, sit with the sadness. I'm like, you want me to feel this? She goes, yeah, because then you can release it. And I thought she had two heads, and, you know, I looked at her, and then I did that one day. I just had an epiphany or something, and I sat with it for a while, and you know what? I released it, and it was really good because I took so much work suppressing it and holding it in. And I think sometimes when you walk through that fire of pain, it's not so bad. I got through it. I'm not dead. I didn't commit suicide. I'm here. You know, I walked through that. I faced it, and now I'm okay with it. And I think once you acknowledge that, because it takes a lot of work to cover it up. I think it takes a hell of a lot more energy to cover it up than acknowledge it. At least
you're right.
You know, so, yeah, and sometimes I tell my listeners, hey, this is what it is. You know, hey, you can walk through this. You can walk through anything. It's not going to hurt you.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah, so people are just, hey, that's what it is, right? You write about the queen. What is she, and what is she trying to teach us?
The queen, you know, what's funny about the queen in the book that I read, actually not funny in a ha-ha way, but in more of a lightened epiphany way of looking at her, is what I love about the queen is in so many spiritual stories or spiritual contexts, it's always the male that's leading.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really have a woman that leads. We don't really have a woman that's bringing forth the wonderment of life. Like, it's not Jesus. I mean, it's Jesus. It's not Mary Magdalene.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
oh, yeah.
You know, which is always fascinating to me. So, you know, and in the Jewish faith, the women used to teach the spirituality to the kids thousands of years ago. The women used to have a wonderful part and say in spiritual community. And I love the use of the queen that came forward for this. It wasn't something that I had selected, but after I wrote it and looked back on it, I was like, wow. It is the emergence of the divine feminine, and that in that feminine quality that I really believe that your heart is feminine.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the mind is masculine. And that we've misconstrued it in our life, in our relationships, where, you know, the quote-unquote physical woman is trying to tame the physical man.
Mm-hmm.
and boss him around. But what's really happening is it's really what's unresolved inside of us. The queen wants the control because she's in control of what's happening. It's a receptive aspect of you. Whereas the mind is more masculine, it's more action-oriented. So it needs to settle down, it needs to relax in order to hear what it needs to do. So the queen is teaching you about wisdom, teaching you about what the heart brings to the table. And what the heart brings to the table, what the queen is explaining to us is she doesn't make any movement until she's inspired to. And why that's fascinating is most of us are always moving, always doing. Even when we're not doing anything, we're doing. And most of us do the doing by thinking. And so our thinking is repetitive, our habits are repetitive, our behaviors are repetitive, our life is repetitive. And it takes out the life expansion that life already is now. So we spend most of our time waiting, but we don't know what we're waiting for. But we're waiting for something. And what the queen teaches us by connecting to that deep, profound stillness that is already here, she teaches us that by sitting in it, by resting in it, will be incited. And when we get incited, then that shoots up to your brain, and your brain knows exactly how to do it now. So it's a different way of living your life. Rather than thinking and going, thinking and going, thinking and doing any of that, it's a new way of being. And that new way of being is to listen with your whole being and be comfortable with what will feel like to your mind at first, being alone. So I always ask, I'll bring this up on your show to your listeners that may be listening to us dialogue right now, is this question. Just write this question down and just let this question permeate through your week. Like, at first you're going to have a response, and the response may be partially right. It may be a response that reminds you that you're in school and you need to be right. So just be with the question itself, and let the question itself unfold, because if you're able to get to the end of this question, you'll probably have a deep, profound realization of who you are. And the question is this: why am I so frightened to be alone?
Interesting.
Because innately in our society, that's what it's come down to. We are afraid to be alone. We need the noise in our mind to feel like we're alive. But being alive and being life itself is quite different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, repeat that question again, David, for our listeners maybe who are contemplative right now.
Sure. No. Then the question is, why am I so frightened to be alone? And your listeners do not have to try to find an answer now. It's not so much about finding the answer, which we're used to. It's more just about contemplating that question when you're going on a walk or when you're by yourself. The first instinct, obviously, when most people hear that, is to think, well, I don't want to be alone. Right?
Yeah.
They start to think about their physical life and security. And then the question will allow them to start to look at, what is security? What are you being, and then you start to go into deeper aspects of the unfoldment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in your book, you talk about going out in nature a lot, and I feel that's very recharging for me. And when I'm actually near Buffalo, New York, and I'm freezing my tail off right now. So going out in nature would probably freeze my tail off. But when I read that part, there's a park here, and we have, it's with trees. And when I lived at home with my parents many moons ago, I would go to that park, and I felt at home with nature. So what are some other ways you think, besides nature, where people can connect, besides the forest, maybe the water, any place, I think? Why do you think that's so valuable for us to go back out in nature?
I believe it's valuable because when you look at the trees and plants and animals and birds, I mean, it's so extraordinary that in the morning, literally when the light hits a bird, it just starts singing. It's like, yay! Like, it just can't help but celebrate a new day. The light hits most of us, and we're like, oh, no, not another day. Then the mind starts, stories start, and we've already ended our day within 5 minutes of waking up. Like, we just can't wait to go out with friends or whatever. So the reason why nature is so important is because nature exists in stillness. Mm-hmm. Look how strong a tree is in that stillness. The tree is not trying to impress you. It's not trying to show you something. It's not trying to get your approval or prove something. It just simply is. The same with all of life that's in nature. And one of the things that I love about nature that it really teaches you from, a manifesting point of view, is you plant the seed is planted, and the seed is the idea, whatever the creative idea is that comes to you. Mm-hmm. And what takes that idea? Well, it takes nurturing. It takes gentleness. It takes kindness. It takes, for a plant, it takes water. So the water goes and hits the seed, and then sooner or later it starts to sprout up, and the light helps the seed, so you bring light to it, and then it keeps growing, and the stillness, it's nurtured in stillness. And it's the same thing with our ideas. And that's why nature is important, to remind us of who we are, that we are each an idea of the infinite. That each of us, the infinite had an idea, and we were born. Consciousness was like, well, let's go back out there and play again. You're like, okay, let's rock and roll. And then you came back out there and forgot for a short time who you were, and now you remembered, and now you're excited because now you could play. And how come we could play and have joy in the present moment? It's because we know that we know that we know that we are fully provided for and taken care of. And how do we know that? Because we are safe in stillness. When you have lack of safety in the present, when you don't feel safe in the present, we create all sorts of nightmares and confusion and craziness and role-playing and stories and projections and all sorts of stuff. As we begin to realize who we are, we begin to feel more safe, and we don't need the stories anymore. We don't need the thoughts. We don't need the television. We don't need the radio. We don't need to go entertain ourselves, because when we are not safe, the mind needs entertainment. The mind needs to be entertained. And the only way that you can be a dreamer is if you're asleep. So when you wake up from your dream of being asleep, you wake up to the vision of your life. And so the importance of being in nature is to rest in the stillness that has been sustaining this planet and universe and globe and everything for millions of years without you doing anything. So why not rest in it? And in that resting, you'll see how beautiful and immense and powerful and strong and wonderful and inspiring and loving and kind and generous and all that's just natural. Like, you don't even have to work for it. Because when you're in stillness, you're like, oh, this is who I am. Oh, how refreshing.
Definitely. I just liked that about nature. It was great. I was like, wow, I can't wait for the weather to break. I want to get back out there. I want to go to that park, man. I can't wait to go see the squirrels in the trees and the the red-tailed hawk, and, you know, because there's a red-tailed hawk that lives there, and he comes up to me once in a while, or he allows me to come up to him to a certain point, which is really cool. Nature is beautiful. I love it, too. I really do, and It's a beautiful thing. We need to get back to our roots. So I just thought I'd bring that out to people, because sometimes, you're right, we have so much this media stuff, and we watch the news, or we're on the internet, you know, we're on TV, we're watching something or trying to fix something or do something, and maybe just allowing us to be in nature. We needed to be reminded of that.
And what's even funnier to me is we can't even just, quote-unquote, be. Mm-hmm. We have to be happy, be love. Like, we have to,
I know. The state of being.
We have
being,
to be
right?
All this stuff. We just can't allow ourselves to be like nature, to just be nature itself, and to allow the ebb and flow of things, of life itself, which is working for us, to work with us. It's all working with us.
Mm-hmm. Not against us. Thank God for that. You know, thank God for that. Just kidding. How can people use this book? How can we use it in our daily lives?
Here's a good example of how you could use it in your daily lives. My mom is a devout Catholic. Mm-hmm. She's always been Catholic. So I wrote this book, and she read it, she started reading it, and she already had a billion questions. And so I said, okay, that's all right. Let's not talk about the questions now. Just read the book again. Mm-hmm. And she read it a second time. And those questions kind of ran out. And then, so she picks it up now before she goes to work, and she finds like a sentence that she wants to do, and she just kind of contemplates that sentence. And the way that you could use the book, because the book really isn't about you trying to figure out who you are. The book is essentially who you are, mm-hmm. which is different from most books, because most books are trying to convince you of who you are.
That's true.
This book isn't trying to convince you of anything. I'm not asking you to convince yourselves that you are everything, because you are everything.
Yeah, exactly.
It's already inside of you. You don't need to have techniques to go to a place that's already right where you are. Right? The other thing that we have to do is we have to question more. That would be beneficial. But how I feel the book should be used is just read the book once. You can get away with it. Get away from it. Read it again. And then use it as a place where you can come back to every once in a while to contemplate different things. And maybe you could use it for your journal or meditation. Maybe in meditation you choose one thing and you just kind of contemplate that. But this book is more of a soul-to-soul book. Mm-hmm. I don't really feel the book is the type of book where once your mind gets involved with the book, you've lost maybe the point of the book. Because the point of the book when you read it is healing in nature. I work with people sometimes in bereavement support that are going through loss, that have bought this book for friends and family, and to help them out, to help them understand where they're at. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully you could use this book as not a book of trying to convince yourself of who you are, and then you go into affirmations and chanting and mantras, mm-hmm. but a place in which you yourself can just simply rest in who you are and read about yourself. It's like reading about who you are.
Yeah, it is, actually.
Yeah.
There I am.
So
the
probably, the more I'm talking, the book is probably channeled by Metatron.
Yeah, or something. Yeah, or, yeah, channeled by, or, you know, just another being of the light who's probably more, you know, maybe on the other side or something. You know, that's what I kind of got that feeling. I was like, oh, there's a soul. Yeah.
It's an Archerian.
Yeah. But it's amazing you bring up your mom, who's, my mom's a devout Catholic too, and I was the opposite of my mom growing up. I questioned everything about the Catholic Church, everything, you know. I went to Catholic school, and I'm going up to the nun, and I'm like, what about this? And she's like, it's a mystery. And my mother would be like, you know, you got to have faith, you know. And now I still question stuff, and now she's questioning stuff in her old age.
Right, that's beautiful.
Yeah, but, you know, people don't realize it's okay to question things. It's part of the seeking of the soul, I call it. You seek what's in your soul. Your soul wants answers, and questions are sometimes actually very beneficial for your soul growth. So that's amazing that your mom had those questions. That's really cool. You know, I think that's great. You know, my mother...
Well, she probably feels that way because she would like to see women in leadership roles.
Ah, okay.
She's not that happy because women are allowed to be priests and women are allowed to lead and that it's kind of an all-male type thing and they don't look at men as a... So there's a lot of things that she's starting to question now. Mm-hmm. And my sense is that here is the emergence of the feminine. Like mm-hmm. the authentic feminine, not the feminine of physicality. But our authentic femininity is coming forward where both men and women are starting to rediscover this part of themselves, which is, you know, you're feminine, like the queen in the book. It's receptive. It's creative. Mm-hmm. That's the birthplace of creation, is the feminine.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. That's very true, yeah. Yeah, we're starting to see a lot of shifts in our world. You know, I think we are starting to see a lot more of that, and I think we're going to see that in more decades to come. So
definitely.
What is light?
What is light?
Yes, what is light? Exactly, what is light?
Consciousness. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that pops in my head is Christ light.
Mm-hmm.
That Christ light, that innate light which we all are.
Mm-hmm.
That Buddha nature. Your nature, your true nature is the light.
Mm-hmm.
And the true nature is the questions take you to a certain point, then sooner or later you're going to have to jump.
Mm-hmm.
And go into the place which we don't want to be in, which is stillness.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to be in the stillness, like you know, is to be aware of the self. You know, if your listeners want a little bit of a practice, because maybe they're having difficulty in meditation or they don't want to meditate, they could simply just close their eyes and ask themselves, I am going to be aware of myself. By closing your eyes and just saying to yourself, I am going to be aware of myself, you see the self.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Bible, Jesus simply says, all you have to do is watch yourself to know yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't say, you know, look outside yourself and follow people outside of yourself. His whole teaching was based on going inward, that it's all in you.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you understand that it's in you is you have to watch it. Well,
mm-hmm.
you watch it. So watch it. Watch the self that's always trying to get you away from your own peace of mind, because that's what thoughts are doing. They're always trying to keep you away from having peace of mind. They're always like, they're very clever. The storyteller is always clever. You know, it's subtle and loud, and it uses past and future, and it uses people and yourself. It uses anything that it can get to keep you away from peace of mind, because when you have peace of mind, you're in great power.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you are, when you live in the now. You know, as Eckhart Tolle so eloquently wrote, the power of now.
Yeah.
You know, it was, when we stay in the now instead of living in the past or projecting into the future, you know, it's amazing what you can accomplish, really. You know, people think, oh, you know, I got to, you know, plan for this and plan. That's great, but living in the now is the most important thing you can do, and being aware of now.
And the fascinating part about that is that's where you always are.
Mm-hmm.
Even when you make the suggestion to yourself, well, I have tomorrow. Huh. There's no such thing as tomorrow because it's a time thing. You're always in eternity, like you're always now. Like you're never.
Yeah.
I am now.
Right? Yeah, really? I am now, and that is it.
Yeah. And seriously. So it is.
I know. It's amazing. In my work, people are always looking at the whens. When is this going to happen? When is that going to happen? Well, why don't you just worry about what's going on now? You know, and I get hung up on, or they get mad at me, or whatever. Because we are always looking forward to something, like you said, outside of ourselves. When you, like, it's in there. It is. It's right in there, and I don't know what else to say about that one. So.
And that's a wonderful point, and I love that space that you provide for your clients and people that come and see you, because by not being with now,
mm-hmm.
and being with what is unfolding, because here's a good example. Let's say that inside of you you're feeling lacking in some way, so that you have strong emotions of lack.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't want to experience that. Who wants to experience that? So what we do is we avoid feeling that
now.
And what we do is we create a mantra of wealth and abundance. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to feel the lack. So then we go, well, I'm abundant and wealthy. And then so now you have a mantra that you're speaking about abundance and wealth, and what keeps showing up is lack. And so what we do is when it comes up, we deal with it as it comes up. We don't create it.
Mm-hmm.
So your spirit, your soul is amazing, because it will generate the experience now that it wants you to look at, so you can be with it, see it, forgive it, heal it. Do whatever you do to heal. And then it opens you up to something more. So why that is such a good thing to observe is that now you see how the mind works. The mind is pain and pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you pain, and now it wants you to have pleasure. Like, it creates all this pain, and now it wants you to create all this pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's like this dance that the mind is doing. And the soul itself knows that that's what's happening. So it just observes it in awareness. And awareness to me is always a state of awe. Because right when the label comes from awareness, it labels and categorizes what it's experiencing. And once that happens, you're going to get a good or bad result. So by being in awareness, you're in a place of detachment. You're just seeing it for what it actually is, which is just a bunch of energy that wants to move through you, right? Energy, emotion, energy, motion. So you're just seeing it for what it actually is, which is just energy passing through, but the mind wants to label it, call it something. Right?
Yeah, really? Yeah.
So the more that we could be with it, which is wonderful news, which is what you're telling your clients, which is great, the more expansive and all the things that they would like when they're asking the when will actually take place faster.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's a little bit counterproductive when you're trying to do a psychic reading with them sometimes, but, you know, it helps, it keeps them kind of grounded, because that people get so caught up in the time element sometimes. And it's like, okay, you know, it's great, but... when we look at what's going on now, we can... okay?
I love it.
Because he may have left you for another woman, but why? Okay?
Yes.
What are you doing here? I'm not a therapist, but I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But, you know, so nice, you look at what you're doing here. And that reminds me of, you say, by recognizing the storyteller, what is happening? How do we recognize that storyteller?
The moment that you become aware of what you're telling yourself is the moment of recognition.
Mm-hmm.
The moment that you're aware that you're telling yourself that nothing ever goes my way, I'm not good enough, blah, 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 blah. The moment that you become aware of that, mm-hmm, is the moment of recognition, and the power of that story starts to dissipate. So by recognizing the storyteller, you start to see it for what it is. And that's the practice. Recognizing, we're all learning right now how to recognize mind and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ego and spirit. We're all recognizing that little dance that's happening. It looks like a dance that's happening. And spirit has no idea about this little thing that is trying to call itself something, right? That's why we have the great... that great story of 40 days and 40 nights with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much what we're all going through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're all saying, wait a second, you're not real. Well, what's real?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this just popped in my head to share as well. So when someone tells you the truth,
mm-hmm,
do you need to have proof?
No.
Okay, so the truth can't be proven.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to prove God.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're all doing in our life. Most people are trying to prove God all the time, but you can't prove the truth.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
That just popped in my head there.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. You got somebody working with you.
I believe it's an Arcturian.
Somebody's working with you from the other higher being working with you.
Yeah, you'll find out probably who it is when I get off the phone.
Well, usually we, I think we all have, like you brought out in the last chapter of the book, we have all come to meet here and to come back to realize who our real, authentic self is, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that we're all part of that journey, or that gathering, if you will. So that I thought on that.
I love it.
Yeah. We're all here to enlighten one another, and you may say something different, I may say something different, but it may reach somebody differently. Someone may not be able to listen to me, but you get through them to them. You know, it's the authentic self we're really trying to get to.
That's
a beautiful thing. Yeah, so, and we got a little bit of time left, so any final thoughts? And, you know, because this book is really good. I think it's, I got to get my recommended reading list out on my site soon. I have a list of books, and yours is going on, and a couple other people's is going on there. You know, I call it my recommended reads for people who want to do some more in-depth soul work. I call it the soul work, you know, cultivating the
soul. Yeah, well, that's what we're coming back to.
Exactly.
Yeah, I would recommend just to your listeners, the book itself is $9.95. You can get it on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com. It's at some bookstores. I don't know which ones you might have to call. But, you know, buy the book and get together with your friends and read the book and talk about the book and have like a little light circle.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, have a light circle. Get together with a group of people. Not going to spend a lot of money. You can go get yourself a two-buck chuck at Trader Joe's or wherever you do. And talk about what the heck is going on in the book and how that is in your life. You know, I went up to San Francisco where I grew up, and I came home with my daughter, and one of my mom's friends from her sewing group said to me, she got the book, and they were all talking about it, and she said, David, I want to know where all this wisdom came from. I said, just a lot of growth, you know, just a lot of practice. That's all. Life is a practice, and we tend that in life to be hard on ourselves, but we forget that it's just a practice. We're all learning. And most of us feel like we think that we know it all. We don't really know anything. And it's quite refreshing to realize that, oh, good, I don't know anything. You know, and not knowing something doesn't mean I'm saying you're just like dribbling out of your mouth or something. It just means that you're just in a space where you're open to learn. Where you're willing to learn, where you're willing to look at yourself, where you're willing to forgive, where you're willing to just to embrace things that you might not have embraced before. You know? And then hopefully by the time you're 70, you're not the same way that you were when you were 20. If so, it would have wasted place to be.
Right.
You know? So I would hope that each of your listeners, if they're here listening to the show, they seem like people that are open and willing to learn, and that's all we can ask for. So that's what I recommend to your listeners, just a light circle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and, you know, just to continue to ask those questions and to be the seeker of the soul. And I think that's important. When you stop asking those questions, I think that's when you're in trouble, personally.
Definitely. And you're right. And not because when you're asking them inside of ourselves and about our lives, then we're going to ask them outside of ourselves, right?
Right.
And that's what's not happening right now in our society, is we're not asking enough questions.
Right. And that's what we need to focus on, is to seek those truths, you know. And I think as I'm getting older, you know, and asking different questions as I'm getting older, you know, I'm getting those answers, but in different ways. It's really odd. I don't know what's going on, but I really am grateful for the journey that I have been on. I never would have said that 10 years ago.
I love it.
You know, and I think you too. You know, things that really shake our core really bring the best of us, our strengths out, and where we really are. So that's just my two cents.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Well,
I love those two cents.
Well, hey.
I look forward to your book on.
Yeah, it's my memoirs. It's on my journey and how I came to be. So it's going to be good. I think it's because I teach through personal experience, and some people It's a journey. Life's a journey. It's a wonderful journey. It's been a chaotic journey, it sounds like, for you too. But it was a pleasure to have you on the show today, David. It was awesome. I'm sure you're going to have other books come out, and you're always welcome on the show. And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience for me.
Thank you so much for having me on, and have a great time in the fire fireplace.
I don't have Stay one. It's warm. By my space heater, but that's okay.
Okay, by your space heater. And have fun by your space heater.
It's Buffalo, New York. What do you expect? Well, every...
Anyway, okay. I'll be out there soon. I'll be out in New York soon, so I'll let you know.
Okay, great, great. Well, everyone, may the angels carry you through. Thank you once again, David, for coming on, and I look forward to your future works.
Thank you so much. Peace and blessings.
You too. Take care, everyone. Bye.